you know, I think because probably everyone, you know, that you're interviewing is kind of, you know, beating down on boomers. I just want to say a good thing about them.
Welcome to Politico Money. I'm Ben White.
You know, my uncles and my dad are boomers, and you know, I like my dad a lot.
And you're listening to episode 2 of Baby Bust. This podcast series is about the challenges faced by millennials, Gen Z, Gen X.
I think we're Gen Z.
Yeah.
But the underlying thesis is that the baby boomers left a lot of stuff for subsequent generations to clean up.
The college debt thing is pretty real for our generation.
You know, small things like...
I don't, for example, think baby boomers are willy-nilly ruining the planet.
Fiscal issues, the future of the planet, all the rest of it.
Yeah, it's a big subject. So...
Neil Howe is a boomer.
Yeah, do you hear me?
Yeah, I got you. And I wanted to talk to him because he's not just any old boomer.
Okay. Yeah. Hey, go ahead. Shoot.
He's thought a lot about this stuff. He still does. Neil Howe and his colleague William Strauss coined the term millennial generation about 3 decades ago.
We knew that they'd be the high school graduation class of 2000, and we knew there'd be all these ABC and NBC news specials about the high school class of 2000. We thought, well, you know, coming of age with the new millennium, let's just call them millennials. So, there you know.
He's a historian, economist, and demographer, and an authority on generational trends.
To make Xers, you know, feel even worse about their lives than they already do, that's how millennials were named before even Xers were. So,
he's also the author of over a dozen books. And he's well known for his theory that generations come in cycles, and it's a four-generation cycle.
History shapes generations as children and coming of age, and then those generations, basically 40 years later, 40, 50 years later, as midlife leaders and parents, shape the next generation, right? So there's a full circle of cause and effect.
That theory got the attention of Steve Bannon, who in 2010 released a documentary called Generation Zero.
It was sort of... uninvited, it happened.
That is structured around his theory that history in America unfolds in a recurring cycle of 4-generation-long eras.
Certainly sold us a lot of books, you know.
So I wanted to ask Neil Howe, as an authority and as a boomer, about the public policy problems that are left behind. And I'm thinking specifically about Social Security, Medicare costs, the state of the planet, and the national debt and deficit. So a lot of this stuff left behind by boomers, not real great. What do you, as a boomer, make of all of this?
Well, I'll tell you something. I learned this really early, writing about generations. Every generation is what it has to be. And it usually is the right generation for the time, right? Every generation, I'll say this, feels fresh at the time. When we begin to meet it, we begin to think, yeah, they're different, but, you know, maybe we need that. And so there is a time when we kind of have a romance with the new generation. Yeah, they're kind of taking us somewhere. That's the right direction. And then ultimately, once they get in power, once they get to reshape everything according to their own, you know, collective personality, we get sick of them, right? Now, my God, did we get sick of the greatest generation back in the late 60s and 70s. Certainly boomers did. Boomers raged against them. And a lot of the other generation, including the silent, kind of agreed with us, right? I think that boomers like what we call a prophet archetype, and I can look at this historically because we've had many other examples of them, that these kinds of generations are remembered historically for their great permanent influence they've had in reshaping the nation's values. There's no question that even millennials now, if you ask them who made the greatest music, I mean, you know, they'll all go back and say, yeah, I learned it in Guitar Hero. I mean, it's Beatles, it's Stone, it's all the Zeppelin. And you ask them about the 1990s in music, are they kidding? That's some black hole that Xers invented. I mean, they have known nothing that was created during that time. I guess my point is that boomers will always be remembered for their endowments to the culture, to values, to religion. I mean, if you look, for instance, in certain trends now, they're incredibly popular. I mean, look, for instance, at alternative and complementary medicine, holistic medicine. Look at mindfulness. You know, look at yoga, look at Whole Foods. These used to be bizarre, offbeat, fringe movements. Thanks to boomers, a lot of these shifts in values are having to do with how we live, how we look at relationships, family, how we look at our health, our bodies, our I don't know, the universe. Our language has changed because of this generation. And I think history shows us that's important. I also would say that boomers are typically remembered politically for what they do late in life. The pattern is that boomers as elders preside over the next crisis, the one they missed when they were born and first grew up as kids.
Right. So, I mean, I guess you're making the argument that we should embrace the boomers for giving us the Beatles and yoga and Whole Foods and absolve them for destroying the planet, crushing the social safety net, bankrupting the country, and essentially, you know, leaving us massive fiscal problems to clean up. But it's okay because we have yoga and Whole Foods. Is that the argument?
Well, look at it this way. If you look at a lot of these trends that have happened, I mean, for instance, look at our debt. I mean, look at pay-as-you-go entitlement systems. Who started that? It wasn't the boomers. It was the greatest generation, right? And they got the free ride on that. So did the silent to some extent. Boomers are pretty much paying their way in those programs. We hugely raised their FICA taxes back in the early 80s, and we delayed their retirement. Boomers have not gotten the free ride on this stuff. You know, boomers, the crime boomers committed with a lot of these trends, a lot of these things, was mainly one of inaction. They basically, again, have not exerted any kind of decisive control over our civic direction. So that is true. I would not say that a lot of these things that have been put into play were acts of commission. I would say the same thing is true. And, you know, depending on what you think of our defense establishment, our military, that that was an interesting quote when Trump said, great nations do not wage permanent wars. That's kind of an interesting one, kind of a typical boomer comment. Well, why don't we just go home? You know, just dismantle the thing. It's not working. But I will say that don't put down the value stuff. You know, typical Xer, you're saying, oh, yeah, they gave us, you know, diet foods and yoga. I think boomers gave younger generations a language of communitarianism and holism that they are going to use when it comes time to bind this country back together again.
To fix everything that boomers broke, you mean?
Excuse me?
To fix everything that boomers broke, like use that communitarian ethos and actually do something with it rather than just go to Woodstock?
Well, exactly. Well, it's basically saying, you know, they have this idea of a whole world of a community that thinks together and acts cohesively. I think, in other words, you will find whatever new civic order emerges from millennials, and let's hope it's a good one, you will find that will be heavily suffused with boomer language. And that's what I'm saying. That's how the boomer legacy will endure. We all, like it or not, sort of speak that language of personal community empowerment that boomers bequeathed us. And yeah, when you tear something down, I think the very least you can say is that boomers have implanted a few of the paradigms or some of the ideas and handed them off, if not to Xers, to millennials to do something constructive with them. Let me also say on this whole question of the environment and so on, I mean, our whole awareness of the environment was a total boomer creation, right? I mean, that happened in the 60s and 70s. Before then, we never even thought about it. The whole idea from moving from gross national product, you know, to some sense of gross national welfare that actually included all these kind of holistic externalities was a totally a boomer phenomenon. And I remember those days. And before boomers were around, no one cared at all about any of that stuff that you say that boomers knew nothing about. So I guess what I'm saying is, again, to come back to that point, boomers created the perspective and the awareness by which we apply the critiques and say that boomers didn't know anything about it.
Right. Well, at the same time, not actually do anything about it, and most of the damage done during the boomer generation. But we could argue for hours about that.
I guess what I'm saying is, but before you do something about it, you need to be able to actually become aware of it and articulate the problem. And I think boomers did that relative to the generation that raised them, what we often call the greatest generation. Without, I think, too much irony, we call them the greatest generation. But they were certainly the ones who bequeathed with us all that prosperity and progress, but also bequeathed with us some of those issues that you're talking about.
One of the things you've pointed out is that people in the 75 plus age bracket still dominate stock ownership by a significant margin. Is that a big problem in your view?
Well, they don't just dominate stock ownership. They dominate asset ownership. Amazingly, according to the latest survey of consumer finances, the Fed does this every 3 years. So the last one we had was 2016. Households age 75 plus have the highest median net worth of any age bracket. I mean, this is completely without precedent in our history and probably in the history of practically any society that 75 plus households would be the wealthiest. And I'm talking about median, not mean, right? Mm. They're the most likely to be homeowners. They're most likely to have paid off their homes. They dominate stock ownership. They dominate bond ownership. They dominate everything. They have done very well. So as Woody Allen said, 80% of life is just showing up. And they had incredible timing that way. And in many of this generation, too, there's a lot of guilt about all the things that they've enjoyed. And, this is a generation of, how to succeed in business without really trying. And even that Woody Allen joke, I tell that joke to Xers and they don't even get it. They just say, what's funny about that joke? Just showing up, not in my life. I mean, what are you talking about? It's a great generation in many ways. And I think we're already missing them. And certainly in a world without the silent and nothing but boomers and Xers, we are very much going to miss that generation. But by the same token, they've done extraordinarily well, and neither they nor boomers coming after them have done very much to invest in the civic infrastructure for the generations behind them.
Let's talk about generational shifts for a minute. Your idea that certain kinds of generations always follow certain other kinds of generations. I wonder what that means for our political system now, as eventually the baby boomers cede power to mostly millennials, since Gen X is so small, but to an extent Gen X, but mostly millennials. What does that mean that our political system is going to look like, say, 10 years from now?
Well, first of all, don't jump the gun. There are a lot of silents still in power, particularly on the Democratic Party in the House. You're talking about most of the committee leaderships. Look at appropriations. Yeah, look at the Speaker of the House. These are people who remember World War II. Nancy Pelosi and Maxine Waters and Neil Lowry and you know what I'm talking about. You can go down the list.
Sure.
So the biggest age problem, the biggest age gap, is in the House on the Democratic Party. It's very interesting. It's not so much in the Republican Party. And the reason is because the Republicans actually have done fairly well with Generation X, particularly early wave Xers born in the 60s. Take a look at the primaries in 2016. How many Xers born in the 60s, early 70s were running in those primaries? Mm. More than a dozen. I mean, all kinds of senators and people, governors and so on, were running for president. How many Xers on the Democratic side? Yeah. Very few, right?
Yeah.
Xers have been very slow to take the baton. The best Xers are in Silicon Valley. They're in business. They're startups. They're doing other things. They're not in government. They don't believe The extra philosophy is, I hope I just stay off government's radar screen. You know, that's how I survive. Right. I survive one-on-one. I survive as an individual. There's no safety. You know, I'd be successful by being different from others and my own generation. I think of all the things that I have written about that Bill and I used to write about millennials. And, you know, going back to the beginning, you know, we said they'd be, you know, they'd be protected. They were special. They're optimistic. They're team playing. They're achievement oriented. We said a lot of these things about them. They're conventional. They're attached to their parents and all this stuff. And at the beginning, everyone was saying, you know, X isn't like that at all. They're never going to be like that. And one by one, what I call our down cards all became face up cards, right? So one by one, the evidence emerged on all these things. Yeah, they are kind of risk averse. Yeah, they are closer to their parents. All this stuff came up. But I would say the one prediction we made, which has remained a down card, is that we've always said they are ultimately going to become a politically titanic generation before they are out of rising adulthood. And I think that if there is the beginning of evidence that that's happening, it would have been in this most recent midterm election, because that was an extraordinary jump.
Neil Howe, thank you so much for joining Politico Money. We really appreciate the time.
All right. You're welcome. Wow. What an excerpt.
So after talking to Neil, I really needed a little self-reflection. So I called a friend.
Oh, hey, it's Amy.
Amy Walter is a political analyst, the national editor of the Cook Political Report.
Okay.
She hosts Politics with Amy Walter on WNYC. She's the Friday host of The Takeaway.
On WNYC? Yeah.
Before this, she served as the political director of ABC News.
Sure.
And she's a fellow Xer.
I'm very excited about this, Ben.
Indeed. A topic dear to both of our hearts. So I thought what we would do is just do a little free association to start off with. I'm going to say a couple of words to you, and then you can just tell me the first things that come into your mind. So I'm going to start with baby boomers.
Ugh, self-absorbed.
Yep. That's a good, succinct definition. Gen X.
Long-suffering. And maybe if I can put another word in, dealers. Not in the free traders lingo, but in the, we're just dealing, we're not attracting a lot of attention for it, we just do it.
That's exactly what sort of comes to my mind now that I think about it, when I think about Gen X. We just deal with it. Like, we just do stuff. We do what we have to do, pay our bills, raise our families. Do not like to be bothered by a lot of drama all the time. It's what's most annoying to me about governing by crisis, which is, you know, what we do these days, is that it just screws everything else up. Like, if you got plans to do stuff, they get tossed out the window. If you want to, like, have a normal weekend, you have to deal with a government shutdown and everything else. And I just think that's sort of a hallmark of Gen X. And I don't know necessarily why that is, and we could delve deeply into that, but it's a characteristic of our generation.
I think we're basically the same age. Our parents were silent generation. And they sort of fell into that gap, right? They're not the greatest generation. They're not baby boomers. Who are they? And they were much like us as Gen Xers, that sort of, we just deal, we take care of things. We're not going to put a whole bunch of attention on ourselves. Nobody's going to be writing profiles about us our generation, representing our generation. And so I think that also impacted the kinds of kids that they raised.
When you think about the boomers, I mean, I have some psychological baggage and just general kind of anger and disgust with the boomers for how self-obsessed they were over, you know, their lifetimes, and the fact that, you know, they haven't done anything on climate change, and we have a $22 trillion national debt, and we have entitlement programs that they'll be able to reap the benefits of, and we won't necessarily. I mean, I don't even really count on it that much, and who knows, you know, what happens for millennials and Gen Z. And I want to be, through the course of this series, like, understanding that the baby boomers did do some good things, you know, with the changing nature of society and how we treat women and how we integrate, you know, minorities into the country, and, you know, generally progressive, forward looking approaches to all these things. But I just keep coming back to the fact that they just left us with a giant shit sandwich to eat and did not do anything. And now what they want to do is make sure they protect all of their wealth and don't get taxed any higher and make sure that everything that, you know, they're entitled to, they get. And so I just get left with this residual sense of bitterness. And I don't know, do you feel that as well? Or are you more kind of
You know what? I'm really bitter about two. Yeah, I'm glad you raised that, Ben, because what I feel really bitter about is, again, this is a generation of JFK nostalgia. We're going to put a man on the moon. We can do anything. This sort of, you know, America is this incredible place where no one can tell us what we can't do, right? That is sort of their mantra, the USA mantra. And yet now it's like, well, no, we can't do all of these things. They're too expensive, right? No, we can't, you know, for all of the things that need to get done in this country that are really, we need big fundamental structural change. A lot of it's going to cost a lot of money, whether it's infrastructure, whether it's the way that we fund our schools, whether it's how we are, again, thinking about what our social safety net looks like. All of these things are things that we can do because, like, we're America, damn it. We can do whatever. We can do anything. We can figure this out. We can dream really, really, really big. And I feel like that part is gone. Now it's the, yeah, well, we once dreamed really big, but now, listen, I got this pot of money. I was told it was mine. I don't want you to touch it. And I'm really sorry we didn't figure this out before then, but oh well.
Yeah.
And, you know, the... Look, I think about this all the time, right? If you're living in a community, your kids don't go to the schools there, or you don't have kids living at home anymore, do you just say, well, you know what, I'm sorry, that's not really my problem, or is it the we're all in this together reality? And that piece, that's what worries me the most, is the we're all in this together, and we can do great things together. And I want to leave a world to the next generation and the next generation that looks even better. That seems to not be there. And I'm hoping that maybe that gets solved. And then as we started, Ben, we're the ones who are going to have to solve it.
Yeah.
Not we, but our generation, we.
I mean, I do feel like for the baby boom, and this is not really necessarily their fault, things did happen by magic. You know, it just, they were able to get good jobs right out of college, and college didn't cost them very much. And they
did not
saddle with a lot of debt. Yeah, exactly. That it, you know, they got used to things working out really, really well, because they generally always did. And it didn't require a lot of sacrifice on their part for that to happen. And so they were shaped by events around them that were not necessarily of their own making, and created a worldview that, you know, it's okay to pursue self-actualization because everything's going to work out fine. Right now, everything is not working out fine. Amy Walter, a wonderful conversation fellow, Gen Xer, editor of the Cook Political Report, knows more about politics than any of us, and you know, but she's forgotten more about it than we'll ever know. Amy, thank you so much for joining us on Politico Money.
Thanks, Ben. It was a lot of fun.
Don't try to dig what we all say. Trying to cause a big sensation.
That's it for Baby Bus this week. Next week, we'll be back with Politico editor Carrie Budoff Brown, who also happens to be my boss. And we're going to go back in time and talk about when we really thought we'd solved all of this, particularly the fiscal crisis threatening the future of America.
I remember that summer because it was the summer that I just rediscovered Bananarama. Cool summer. I literally rediscovered that song that summer, and it was so appropriate for the moment.
Our producer is Jenny Ament. The executive producer of audio at Politico is Dave Shaw. I'm Ben White. And if you love the show, or if you hate the show and it really pisses you off, tell a friend. Get them to listen too.